Welcome to the Gay Buddhist Forum, where teachers from all schools of Buddhism offer their perspectives on the Dharma and its application in modern times, especially for LGBTQI audiences. These talks are offered freely to the world and made possible by appreciative listeners. If you would like to support our efforts to share the Dharma with underserved audiences, please visit gaybuddhist.org. There you can donate, find a list of upcoming speakers, or enjoy many hundreds of these recorded talks dating back to 1996.
Okay, as is our tradition, let's go ahead and go around the room and please say your name. Take a little time in between. I guess I'll go ahead and start. My name is Roy.
My name is Mark.
I'm Shantanu Phukan.
I'm Andreas.
I am Manuel.
My name is Michael.
My name is Kay.
My name is Rob.
My name is Glenn.
My name is Ty.
My name is John Wessel.
Gary Dexter.
My name is Rich.
I'm Carl Wolf.
My name is Mario.
My name is Eric Anderson.
My name is Jeff.
My name is Howard DeWitt.
My name is David.
My name is Ben.
My name is Bill.
I'm Tom Bruin.
My name is Dennis.
I'm Peter.
I'm Alfred.
My name is Walter.
My name is Jeffrey.
I'm Brian.
My name is Paige.
I'm John.
My name is Paul.
My name is Steve.
I'm Richard.
My name is John.
My name is Bonnie.
Richard.
My name is Michael.
My name is Jay.
I'm Richard Azzolini.
I'm Tom.
Jack Busby.
I'm George.
Joan.
I'm Michael.
I'm Rob.
Rob.
I think that's everyone. Okay. Our guest speaker today is Joan Amaral. And I'm pronouncing it this way. I just found out that Joan's background is Portuguese. Hence, Amaral, not Amaral.
Thank you. Obrigada.
Joan was ordained as a Zen priest in the Suzuki Roshi lineage by Darlene Cohen in 2004. She lived and practiced at Tassajara Zen Mountain Monastery for several years and currently is in residence at the San Francisco Zen Center, where she was head student during the fall practice period. Welcome, Joan.
Thank you very much.
You're
welcome. Oh, I'm so delighted beyond words to be here. Can you hear me if I speak at this level? If I begin to fade out, just raise your hand or shout out. The reason I'm delighted to be here, well, first of all, it's a beautiful room. It's like this little shining jewel in the midst of the gritty mission. And all of you are participating in that shining jewelness. It is, for me, a miracle beyond words that humans would gather together like this. You have so many other options. It's this gorgeous day out there, and you know, I feel it to be really counterculture, actually, unfortunately. To come into a room and commit to sit still as best we can. We're not producing anything. We're certainly not consuming anything, right? We're just sitting here. It doesn't look like much is going on. So this is really a treasure, and I am so honored to be a part of this. The other reason, or another reason I can immediately think of that I feel very honored to be here, and that I really want to pull forward, is as I was sitting here, the way I self-identified was skinny white woman. And then I thought, should I throw in there straight? I'm not sure. I mean, and part of that is it's spring, and I'm where I'm at in practice where, you know, so I lived at the Tassajara, which, how many people have heard of Tassajara? There's a Tassajara t-shirt in this room. Okay, so some of you have and some of you have. Before I forget, I left some brochures outside, a couple of different things. I want to just mention them briefly. It's not shameless marketing, although there is some of that in there. It's because I think that this would be of interest to you, two things. One about Tassajara is it's a wonderful place. There are many different ways you can be there as a student to deepen practice, to come, not pay anything except offer your labor, and have an experience living in community off the grid, in the mountains, out of the urban, you know, predicament of noise and trash and anonymity. And as a guest, we have a few retreats. Oh, you're reminding me. Will someone please come forward and sit in these two spots, if you don't mind? It would be an offering to me. Just a little bit more closeness. If anybody wants to take, thank you. Okay. Thank you. The thing about coming, there are several different retreats. There are some that are specific, like there's a taking refuge retreat specifically for gay, lesbian, transgender questioning people you might be interested in. There's meditation and recovery. There is yoga, cooking. Anyway, there's a brochure out there you can look at, and you may be interested if you have some time and money this summer. The second thing is I do half-day retreats called Sit and Eat. And they're, I want to hang a bunch of them up in the Hate District because I don't know if you've heard about this thing that the mayor's office is doing, an anti-sit thing, which I understand where it comes from, people hanging out on the sidewalk kind of getting a little obnoxious, but it seems like a bit of an overreaction to ban sitting in public. You know? Anyway, my retreat, a half-day retreat. It's called Sit and Eat, and I co-lead it with a wonderful Japanese bento chef who prepares these fabulous bento lunches. We kind of end with a grand finale of eating after doing a little sitting, a little walking, some talking, you know. So it's kind of a half-day retreat that's geared toward people who are curious and interested in Zen forms, but don't necessarily want all the hoopla. You know, I come from San Francisco Zen Center where there's a lot of hoopla, which actually works for me. I was a dancer, choreographer, love the production values. So, right away, the other thing I want to ask is, would you please just shout out, call out, if you overlap, that's okay, don't worry about it. Why are you here today? What brings you here today?
Community.
Community.
Focus, some inner peace.
Inner peace, focus.
Connection.
Connection.
Friends.
Like-mindedness.
Well-being,
like-mindedness.
I was on the schedule.
Okay, important. Commitment, expectation, responsibility.
Habits.
Reflection.
Quiet.
Wanting peace.
Presence. To feel the energy in the room when I meditate.
Yeah, good.
Love for community.
Mm-hmm.
Joy.
Retreat. Uh-huh. Do I hear suffering? That's why I'm here. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. Well, you can't help but talk about suffering directly or indirectly when you are engaging the Dharma. So one thing is, here we are in the middle of, the first days of spring. And more light that we're interacting with. We did that daylight savings time thing. And, you know, I also want to say that it's Palm Sunday, for those of you who notice. And, you know, I grew up in a Catholic family. Next week is Easter. This, for me, is all about resurrection. And it's right in there with spring. In the Persians, this is their new year is right on the first moment of spring, which I always thought was beautiful. New beginnings, new growth, new life. Suffering in that. You know, there's this thing about April being the cruelest month. You've heard that. You know, what is that? For me, I've been thinking about that this morning, walking over here. how is it, what is the connection with joy, sorrow, and suffering and pain and difficulty? I think this mind of bodhicitta, and I know that you're all from various backgrounds. Like, you're not from the Zen background necessarily, even though some of you may be interested in Zen. And some of you may not identify as Buddhist. A lot of times I don't identify as Buddhist unless I'm pinned down and I have to say something. It's more of just kind of generically being committed to sitting in the fire. Sitting in the midst of my suffering and trying not to move. And if I move, okay, you know, I'm not getting up and leaving. And if I get up and leave, then I trust that I'll come back. That's the commitment, responsibility, on the schedule kind of thing. That other people have an expectation of me. It's okay to have expectations of each other. In fact, we need each other to have expectations of each other. It's called Sangha, community, to pull out our deepest intention. So this thing about spring and resurrection, there's sort of, I'm feeling with spring, this insistence on life, you know, this thrusting of life. It's, you know, call it life energy, call it sex, big sex, cosmic sex, you know. There is a kind of an aggression, sort of. I'm reminded of being on the walkway around the Zendo, around the meditation hall at Tassajara, for those of you who've been there deep in practice period, around this time of year. And being in robes, walking meditation, focused. It's a beautiful morning like this. It's like maybe 10 in the morning like this. The sun is shining. It's the beginning of spring. Oh, and I looked over and I saw this purple iris right there, growing just off of where I was walking. And the sun was hitting it so, and it was so gorgeous. And right at the same time, I felt my own aggression. I felt my own ugliness, my own demandingness, my own, like, in the face of the beauty and the gentleness of this flower. It was almost unbearable. You know, and then eventually kind of sitting with this and feeling the pain of it, not turning away from it, staying with it, I started to think, wait a minute. It's not so, like, me over here and that gorgeous thing over there. Like, first of all, it takes a certain amount of aggression for that beautiful, tender, delicate flower to bust through that cold, packed, dark soil, right? Okay. So it's not just pretty, it's not just delicate. That's a thrust of life, you know. But this is very sobering to enter into this. It reminds me of at the beginning of meals in the monastery, we ring the umpan, which is a gong. Bong, bong. You're in the Zendo and you hear this. And for me, it sounds like a death bell, like someone's died. And it's true. Even if we're a vegetarian, you know, forget about the cow. What about that poor head of lettuce that gave its life? You know, something has died. You know, I can't say it gave its life for me because it didn't really have any choice. That's just kind of the way of things, you know. In order for me to take my place, something had to yield. No one else is sitting here right now, right? No one else is sitting there or there. There's a certain amount of life insistence for us to take our place. So this, for me, is what comes up with spring. The other thing is that I know with this group that there is... Baruch was mentioning to me when I said, well, do you have any idea of what you'd want me to talk about? And he said, well, and I thought this was great because this is up for me too, of... practice off the cushion. You know, what is practice off the cushion? Well, I'm like, duh. What is not practice off the cushion? I mean, you know, for me, I guess what I want to say, my take on this whole practice thing is like right here, like what we just did in this last half hour of sitting. And by the way, I've been shot at in El Salvador, and that was not as hard as sitting. Whether it's 30 minutes, you know, we just did a 7-day retreat at Zen Center, sitting for 7 days. This is hard stuff. This is why we sit in community, because especially when we're so used to seeing value in producing, right? If you're just sitting there when it doesn't look like much is going on. Anything I say today is all about encouraging you and me to just keep sitting, to engage continually in this leap of faith that there is something positive and constructive and helpful for the world, and forget the world, for you and you and you and you and you, happening here just by sitting, by being willing over and over again just to sit right in the middle of whatever's going on. So meditation, I'm trained in Zazen, and so Zazen is just literally seated meditation. It's a Japanese word. More particularly, the kind of Zazen I've been trained in is Shikantaza. Are there any Japanese speakers here? Like, native Japanese? Okay, forgive me. What did you say?
You're doing fine.
Thank you. Isn't it interesting that arigato is similar to obrigada, Portuguese and Japanese? Anyway. So, Shikantaza, which is just sitting, that's how we translate it, is just sitting. And you may think, when you hear that, it's just, well, just sitting. You know, it's not like it's easy. Big difference between easy and simple, right? They're not synonymous. Simple is, we're just sitting here, you know? But it doesn't mean it's easy. It just means it's just sitting. That's what you're going for, just sitting. And Daigaku, who is one of the priests at Zen Center, last week gave the Dharma talk where he's a kind of an ascetic-looking priest who studied. He's American, but he studied in Japan for a long time. And he's very tall and gaunt. And I was sitting to the side of him, and I watched his Adam's apple just move the entire time, which for me was it represented asceticism, you know, this monastically trained person. But he was basically talking about be yourself, express yourself in Zen or Zazen or meditation in your life. Just, there is no other secret than just be yourself, take your place. And by the way, for me, this monastic training, I think monastic training is just lover training. Expressing itself in different ways, but just learning how to give and receive love. This is what I think we're doing. This is what I think priest, Zazen, Zen, any of this stuff is. Anyway, this is what I'm committing to. I'm not sure exactly what it means, but I know the feeling. And this is what I meant by, I don't know if I can say straight, that just see, and it's basically just, well, the difference is that I'm not necessarily going to act on it. And this is where straight and gay or whatever, it gets a little bit convoluted. You know, it's not that I'm going to act from any particular place, but holding the tenderness. And what I think that means is Buddha, 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 Buddha. Seeing Buddha everywhere. This is love. When I experience that, it's just openness, interaction, community wherever. Here, or just walking down the street, the community that arises when you just see someone and smile, and they smile back. What a gift that is. This thing about just doing whatever you're doing completely, being completely doing whatever you're doing, whether it's Zazen, like this, or however people are sitting, just committing in some posture for stillness for a period of time, doing that completely, being at work, doing that completely, being in an argument, doing that completely, making love, doing that completely. And what is completely, you know? When I was thinking about this, what is completely, I feel it has something to do with not separating between the doer and the doing. But it's like a gerund, like everything becomes a gerund. Ing, zazening, being, You know, I had an experience in Orioki as a new student at San Francisco Zen Center. Orioki is the formal meal where you're sitting in the zendo in Zazen posture and you have your three bowls and food is brought to you. It's very formal. The whole thing takes 40 minutes to do the ceremony and you only have about 4 minutes to actually eat. The rest is chanting and bowing and serving each other and, you know. But I had this experience, you know, and as a dancer, as a choreographer, I loved the ceremony of it. And the biggest challenge was, as a server, you know, when I'd come in with my pot, to not see the zendo as my stage. Very embarrassing. The only way I was cured of it was to see someone else doing that. And when she came and I was like, I had to stay like this, but inside I was going like this, you know, because I saw myself. And that's how we help each other, by the mistakes that we make. No mistakes, it's all just helping if you're up for it and you're paying attention. Anyway, in that particular morning during the sesshin, we had a group of visiting Japanese priests. Okay, Japanese priests, exoticism, you know, elevating the Japanese priest. But he came. This one particular priest came in and he was wearing his robes, you know, and he comes in front of me to serve me and he bows. He bows with pot and I was floored. It was like the bottom fell out. There, something happened there that was powerful and I just opened and the tears just started flowing. Later on when I was with this, what was that? I felt what I was experiencing, what he was giving me was just serving. There was no person there. There was no personality. There was nothing extra. There was just the serving. And I felt so completely met. Without any judgment, without any, you know, nothing extra, just this beautiful, precious, never-to-be-repeated moment of guest and host, of serving and being served. So, this thing about, you know, outside practice, like what do? I'm interested in this word outside and outsider, because some people might say, I'm an outsider. Look, I'm the only girl in the room right now. Whether or not I'm straight or gay, whatever, who knows? I'm wearing this, Roxu. No one else is wearing one of these. This is just, you know, my teacher gave it to me. We sew it ourselves. It has calligraphy on the back with my name on it. It's a religious garment, you know. Is that separating? Does that make me more of an outsider? What I said at the beginning about what a blessing it is to be here is to have contact with someone who's different, you know, because there's this thing, it's the two truths, both, to hold both, having affinity groups and having safe space and having common experience, you know, overlapping where you can sort through the confusion and the suffering in your own life from your own particular place where there's affinity, there's that community, is great. But I was saying to someone just before we started sitting together of what I've experienced at Zen Center is we have the Sangha and recovery groups and we have gay-identified groups and, you know, all different kinds of things that are important, and I just love it. Oh, and people who speak Spanish as a first language, we're starting to do that more on Saturdays. I just love it when there's someone who's not identified from that group who comes in to just be there, you know, if the group's up for it, to lessen a feeling of other. Because if we keep having these kinds of initiatives at, like, Zazen for Spanish-speaking people and gay-specific and in recovery-specific, like this, like, when does it breed separateness? Is it connecting or separating? This is a dynamic tension to be held, I think, with some equanimity, if you can stand it. And equanimity does not mean you never fight and that you always are in perfect agreement, but that it's held somehow, that it's being looked at as widely as possible. And, you know, it may be at the beginning that it's smaller. Okay, so here's the thing. It's smaller, a smaller circle. And then when you're ready, you extend out. And I think this is individual practice, is you just keep opening your arms as wide as you can bear, and then wider, and then wider, and then wider. Circle. You know, arms are for hugging. Anyway, Zen Center is in this capital campaign phase right now, where it's called widening the circle. And people are very nervous about this within Zen Center, and it's breeding all kinds of feelings of outsiders. And we even use the word outsider, you know, like when we talk about residents and then outsiders. Oh, God, every time we say that. One person made an announcement in the Buddha Hall at Zen Center, packed with people, you know, all kinds of people who come to hear the teachings, and said, we're going to be starting a child care program on Saturdays. Great. And it's going to be led by two different people. Great. You know, we want to have one resident, great, and one outsider. And I went, oh, no, stop saying that. Oh, God. But I think it's just, you know, and this is a great example of our delusion, not just Zen Center's, my delusion, that person's delusion. You know, we try. And this is the thing about multicultural stuff, too, is we can't be afraid to say the wrong thing. I mean, if I can start by admitting my delusion, my racism, my sexism, my classism, whatever, that it's in there. It's not like, you know, every time I say something that's kind of off, like, oh, God, there it is. I'm outed as, you know, a bad person, a racist, or whatever. If I can see right from the beginning, I am trying and I am learning. I think the commitment is to learning. And that's where we can help each other to hold. Can we hold space to say the wrong thing, to make mistakes, and to come back to each other? And this, by the way, is what I think meditation, sitting, zazen, whatever we're calling it, is training us in, to simply come back over and over again. To what? To our own lives, to our own intention, to our own commitment to keep growing and learning. Okay, 11:30. I want to stop in a few minutes because I definitely want to leave time for some interaction, although I'm going to hang out with you guys afterwards after 12, so if there are any questions or, you know, if you want to talk, I'd love that. The other thing that I wanted to say is that this thing about work, Baruch mentioned about working with difficult emotions, this is great stuff. This is all about what I've been talking about with the purple iris and the self-loathing and not hanging out in the self-loathing, although as a Portuguese person, I love to wallow for a while. It's called saudade, okay? There's a word for it culturally. You know, and it's called like a grieving period, not leaping out of my grief. You know, hanging out there because there's important information there. So there's a story of ancestor Dongshan, who, Chinese guy, long time ago, who's a master, and he's outside in the courtyard or something, and there's another monk nearby who's washing his bulls, and he sees two birds contending over a frog. Messy, you know. And the monk says to Dongshan, why does it have to come to this? And Dongshan says, it's all for your benefit. Like, anything that happens, anything that arises within, out there, is all for our benefit. And, you know, I want to say right now, right here in this beautiful room, it's kind of contained, it's a little kind of incubator or something. It's safe and easy to say that. Some things that will happen to us in our lives and that have already happened to many of us are not so easy to take on as a teaching right away. And that's fine. That's the grieving thing. That's the falling apart thing. That's the messy thing. That's like out of control. You're a priest and you said that? Yes. I'm a priest who's grieving right now. Whatever, you know. But eventually to be able to come back, you know, zazen meditation as a baseline doesn't, that's continuing regardless, that just keeps going no matter what. And then up here there's the highs and there's the all the emotional stuff that's going on. That's happening. That's not to be denied. Eventually, if you can, that's to be held and worked with and taken in, because there's something important there just waiting for you to wake up to. So, you know, this suffering, to not waste an opportunity to know my suffering. When I gave my way-seeking mind talk last fall at Zen Center, the question is, what is my suffering? What's brought me to practice? And I said that in my talk. I said, this is what the talk is about. What is my suffering? And then at the end of the talk, at the end of the talk, as I was bowing, I thought to myself, you know, in front of like 200 people, I thought, wow, did I even talk about my suffering? And sure enough, someone later on said, Joan, I have no idea what your suffering is. You know, that's what you're supposed to be talking about. I don't even think you touched on it. And when I was preparing to talk with you today, last night, I was looking through my notebook, and, you know, it's shocking to me that I couldn't touch my suffering. When I looked at my notebook of my journal and the things that I wrote, I was going through hell last year. Money? How was I going to pay the rent? I wasn't living at Zen Center. How was I going to buy groceries? The relationship I was in was very volatile. We were living together. There was a lot of... He hadn't been working for a year and a half. Very intense stuff. I didn't have a job, you know. And yet, when it came to talk about my suffering, I was kind of clued out. And so what's important for me here to say is that it was so imminent, I was so in it, that I wasn't ready to talk about it. So fine. And I'm still sort of not ready to talk about it. But anyway, this thing of, so being in the midst of the suffering, not being able to see it or talk about it or deal with it, trusting that it's there, and there's this thing we call taking the backward step, which is what we just did this last half hour. That's taking a backward step for a half an hour, sitting, not doing anything, just sitting. Taking the backward step and shining the light in is what Teacher Dogen says. You can do it for a moment in the midst of a conversation, coming into your body, coming into your breath, finding the zazen, the meditation posture, right there as you're standing there in a long spine, relaxing the shoulders, feeling the soft belly, and being in touch with your breath, even as someone's coming at you. And you're feeling whatever you're feeling. For a moment, taking that backward step. In a period of zazen meditation, taking the backward step. Someone said retreat, I think it was you, going to Tassajara or in some other place for a day-long retreat or a five-day retreat, doing a practice period, or in your vow, the schedule thing, the commitment thing, in your vow to whatever, to wake up, to know your suffering, to be kind with yourself, whatever your vow is. Uchiyama Roshi says in one of, he has 7 points of practice. He's not in our lineage, but he's a Soto Zen guy. And one of his admonitions is live by vow and root it deeply. And he talks about, in his own suffering, he talks about a time in his life where he was so wretched, I felt as if I were being trampled over and over again, the way we stamp on weeds, and I was never able to put forth even the tiniest bud. When things were tough, I chose to stick with my vow and bury it deeply in the earth to take root there. If I hadn't, that vow would have died because I was always being trampled. But because the flame of that vow burned within me, the more I was beaten down, the deeper I rooted my vow. As long as you have that vow to live out your life wherever you are, sooner or later, spring will come. And when it does, you will have the strength to grow. This is the life force. So, you know, when he talks about rooting your vow deeply in what? Well, I think in the compost of your suffering, in the, all that shit, the manure, the fertility of all my suffering, all that stuff. You plow your vow back into that, and that's how it blossoms. It's not separate from my suffering, from my delusion, from my mistakes. It's all grist for the mill. It's all fodder for new growth. So, okay. That's it. That's all I have to say. Except, are there questions? Are there comments? Anything that you want to bring up? Because I have a poem, too. But that's just a backup plan. But it's a spring poem. It's a beautiful poem. It's actually called a love poem. And it's a seasonal kind of thing. Maybe I'll read it. But think about something you might want to bring up. And we'll see if anybody wants to say anything in this formal environment or after 12 when we're socializing. Okay, it's called A Love Letter. It's by a Japanese man named Nanao Sakaki. Within a circle of 1 meter, you sit, pray, and sing. Within a shelter 10 meters large, you sleep well, rain sounds a lullaby. Within a field 100 meters large, grow rice and raise goats. Within a valley 1,000 meters large, gather firewood, water, wild vegetables, and mushrooms. Within a forest 10 kilometers large, play with raccoons, hawks, poison snakes, and butterflies. Mountainous country Shinano, 100 kilometers large, where someone lives leisurely, they say. Within a circle 10,000 kilometers large, go to see the southern coral reef in summer or winter drifting ices in the Sea of Okhotsk. Within a circle 10,000 kilometers large, walking somewhere on the earth. Within a circle 100,000 kilometers large, swimming in the sea of shooting stars. Within a circle 1,000,000 kilometers large, upon the spaced out yellow mustard blossoms, the moon in the east, the sun in the west. Within a circle 10,000,000,000 kilometers large, pop far out of the solar system mandala. Within a circle 10,000 light years large, the galaxy full blooming in spring. Within a circle 1,000,000,000 light years large, Andromeda is melting away into snowing cherry blossoms. Now, within a circle 10,000,000,000 light years large, all thoughts of time, space are burnt away. There again you sit, pray, and sing. You sit, pray, and sing. Thank you. Now, if I were at Zen Center, I could bow and get the hell out of here. But you know what? I'm totally okay with just staying here. You know, I started crying at Zen Center when I read that too, just a little bit, and it's... Anyway, there's something about that circle and the nobility, the dignity of a human being just at the beginning, at the end, forever, because there is no beginning and no end, just sitting, just right there.
I'd like to ask you to speak to an experience I have of the word suffering. Mm-hmm. Now, when I hear the word suffering, I'm thinking, well, this is not a good part of life. And this is something to grapple with and to overcome. That's the experience I have to the word. But when I think about my own personal suffering and what I've sort of come to think about suffering, everyone's suffering, is... it's just another face of life. Mm-hmm. It's just a face of life mm-hmm. to be embraced as like part of the whole.
Yeah.
As spring is... I used to think of spring as the resurrection. Now I think of spring as another face of that which is the whole. And what we do is when you talked about meditation, the thing about being meditation... it's learning to be exactly who we are, pretty much without excuses or feeling need to apologize. just being who we are, and taking the practice from the cushion is taking that experience of who we are in the quietude of our meditation out and being there with the suffering as it comes, with what looks like new beginnings, which sometimes seems to be most apparent in the springtime, but I think if one is aware, one can. Every moment is a possibility for
yes.
resurrection. So
yes.
I don't know. I probably asked you to speak to several things at the same time.
It's great.
But
like yes, because yes. you know what? I still am not sure exactly what it's about. But spring for me, I remember just every spring. I spent 6 springs at Tassajara, and you know, in the mountains, and it would always seem that I would be walking by somewhere within Tassajara, and I would see the lilacs in bloom, you know, how fragrant they are, but I would always smell some dead animal. I could always smell something dying. There is something about death and sex. Because for me, like, what I'm calling sex is like this new life and juiciness, and like Hildegard of Bingen, maybe some people know her teaching of viriditas, of greening. She was really onto something with that, which is all about juiciness and the sap rising, you know, in the spring, and, you know, bipeds looking at each other. And the juices, I'm sorry, and the body flowing, you know, like all of that, let's, you know, that is happening too. It's all flowing. And, but there is something in there with death too, something about life, you know, this circularity of life and death, and not sentimentalizing it, that just like that thing, in order for me to take my place, something else can't be here, you know, the death toll of the meal. But suffering too, specifically, and maybe this is you're already knowing this and practicing, but I just want to say that suffering to, like, compassion, do you know that means suffering with? So it's not just, you know, the first gift is for me to know my own suffering, and then to be able to share my suffering, or to share that knowing my suffering with other beings, is the root of compassion, is me suffering with, the bodhisattva way of being right there with other people, not separating my suffering from their suffering. And this is really very challenging. You know, the Brahmaviharas, the 4 abodes of loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity, those are the 4. They all have far enemies, which are obvious, you know, like loving kindness is hatred. But the near enemy of compassion is pity. And it is so tough so easy to fall into that. And I for myself, that's a big one. So the antidote is just to come back to my own suffering, you know, to come back to what is my deep sorrow, to always be in tune with that. So someone said once, the bodhisattva's happiness is happiness with a dent in it.
I have a question, and it's again got to do with suffering. Through a personal experience that happened several years back, it started with some kind of suffering coming to me from a very close person within my life, around my life. The interesting thing was that incident of suffering opened up a whole new realm of spirituality. And it was it's a very interesting concept that I have dealt with in the last several years, as to why does it have to be suffering that brings on a wonderful, brand new part of spirituality that got me where I am now. And it's just a question that sometimes keeps on coming
yes.
back. But that was how it started.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very grateful to it now. But at that time, there was a lot of suffering, a lot of pain,
mm-hmm.
Emotional pain. you know. Now I feel it's great. Whatever happened was probably for the good. But it's still a question. Why just suffering to bring up open those gates?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a great motivator, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know for myself, I'd just be hanging out in front of the TV or something. You know? It's like I said, it's like, God, what else is going to get me on that cushion all the time if things are going fine? And this is the Buddha's the teaching of the Noble Truths, the Four Noble Truths, the first one is, it's translated variously, like life is suffering. Some people have been like, oh God, that's such a downer. Did you have to say that? Is that just a bad translation? There is suffering. Suffering exists. Regardless. There's a fundraiser at Zen Center years ago, apparently. I wasn't there. Where Katagiri Roshi was this wonderful man. He was invited to speak to all the potential donors at this fundraising luncheon where everybody's sipping champagne and, clink, clink, and he came out to say something. And what came out of his mouth was, every one of you in this room, without exception, will die. And there's the champagne glass. So, even if you live this blessed life, we're all still heading in the same direction. Well,
I think there's time for
okay.
Was he asking for a state gift?
Oh my God, that's true! Okay, can I get some contact information for this capital campaign thing?
I love what you said about it's all for your benefit. Today there's a memorial for one of our members we lost earlier this year, and I was thinking about that and how he came and spoke to us about his horrible orphanage childhood and how it opened us to compassion. And it made me think, what you talked about made me think that sometimes what we consider to be the muck and the fertilizer, can help us do the same with others. But how, if part of the Four Noble Truths is to put an end to suffering, why do we want to do that? I mean, there's this dynamic tension. I want to end suffering, but at the same time, like Vami said, sometimes that's the seed for opening us up to all the good stuff, and it also incites compassion. I'm not sure what the question is.
Yeah,
it
no,
seems
I...
like there's this mm-hmm. odd tension between ending suffering and all the good that comes from it.
That's great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There definitely is this tension because I think practice is at the nexus of that. Is like, what do you call that? The hub of that, energy, that movement, that going round and round of, because there's this thing about like suffering does exist. Oh, well, it's like the four bodhisattva vows. Do you guys know this? Beings are numberless. And I vow to save them. Even though they're numberless, even though it's impossible. Delusions are inexhaustible, but still I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, and still I vow to enter them. How do you enter something that's boundless, that has no gate, the gateless gate kind of thing? And Buddha's way is unsurpassable. It can't be surpassed, but I still vow to become it. And I think this is why we have that line in one of our chants, practicing like a fool, like an idiot. Because it's like, and this is another way that it's counterculture, is, like I had a painter friend, apparently abstract expressionists, a lot of them, they only know their painting's done when they turn it upside down, and then it's like, yes, there's a feeling. It's not the usual way. And the way someone phrased this question once, I think that you're asking, is there some structural flaw in the human brain? Is it kind of a structural, is there something inherent that... So it's a very good question, and I think it taps into this not knowing. stumbling along in the dark, not hanging out and yes, this is it. This is not about constructing another solidified identity around, yeah, we got it. We got it going on here in this meditation group. We know what's right. But still, having a commitment, showing up because you're on the schedule, you know, to still continue. And this, thank you for helping me with this, because this is my question right now of how to wholeheartedly engage in this thing that we call, that some people call Zen priest, you know, wanting to uphold the forms and ceremonies, how to fully engage in that without narrowing, without becoming a Zen fundamentalist. What an oxymoron. But I've been called that by the abbot, you know, which is great. Which is like, oh, who would have thought? I thought I was so casual. But I'm actually very traditional because I've seen how the forms and ceremonies help me and I want to preserve them forever. But what I love about, you know, it's really good to get out of Zen Center for a day like this, to come out and have this kind of contact because it challenges. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't negate. And that's what makes it alive in the spring and the seasons. It's just continuing. You know, it's not about controlling. It's like, I think letting go and holding gently are the same thing. Okay. Thank you very much.
This is Joan's first time with us here, and I trust this is the first of many to come. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You're lovely to talk. How about now? Do we have a host? Our host?
Yeah. New host, and usual refreshments out there. And your guest to help yourself to tea, but wash your cup and put it back. I'll be going around with a Donna bowl. It'll be placed on the table out there when I'm not going around with it. The suggested donation is 5 to 8, of course, more if you can, and less if you choose. And there's a list out there that you can sign if you want to get the newsletter, either an e-newsletter or the hard copy. You can sign up there. And we also have a list of the people in the fellowship that's updated every once in a while, and you can indicate that you want to be on that list. Anything like that?
Group to
lunch. Oh, yeah. Some people go to lunch afterwards, and the social period is over about 12:30. So people congregate near the front door, outside the front door. Go to lunch, so you're welcome to join us there.
Speaking of lunch, there will be a lunch following Don Movedin's memorial this afternoon, so if anyone's planning on joining, that's at 1:30. It's at the it's down on Polk Street at Project Open Hand. There are flyers out there with the address and everything. So it's going to last about half an hour, and then there will be a catered lunch. His family, some of his family members will be there if you know that he spoke. there's also a photo board out there if you can't make it to the memorial and just want to take a look. Photos Don took and shared. So.
Jack.
Hi. This is about the newsletter. We have our newsletter mailing today. But I just wanted to talk about it for a minute. I've been coming here for a long time, but practically every week I feel really fortunate to be here, to be able to come here. But there are a lot of people that can't for various reasons. Distance, we have about, of the over 300 hard copies we send out, maybe a dozen or four in Singapore, France, Canada, Mexico, and they can't be here. And sometimes I think of this larger sort of invisible series of concentric circles of other people who aren't here. About half of those hard copies that we send out, and by the way, if you go online, you can get the newsletter there and save us postage and paper. But over the 300, about half of those are prisoners, and they really can't be here. You're talking about being outsiders. These guys are inside, and they have, they've explicitly asked for the newsletter, and so they, that's a connection, a good connection with the outside world for them. So that's what's behind the newsletter, and they're sending it out, a big part of it. So if a, maybe 10 or 12 people can help to put it together like we do every other month, to staple and stamp and label and stuff in envelopes, that would be helpful. And that will be about 15 or 20 minutes after we break here. So please gather around.
Anyone else? Okay, let's stand the dedication. By the power and truth of this practice, may all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all be free from sorrow and the causes of sorrow. May all never be separated from the sacred happiness which is without sorrow. And may all live in equanimity without too much attachment or too much aversion, and live believing in the equality of all that lives.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Buddhist Forum. If you would like to hear several new talks per month and be notified of upcoming speakers so you can participate live, please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook, and join our mailing list by visiting gaybuddhist.org.